Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
I'm Rachel True.
And I'm Trent Venegas.
And you're listening to Quoting Gene Roddenberry,
the 100-day podcast that celebrates what would have been the 100th birthday of the man that created Star Trek.
Each day between now and the end of our podcast,
August 19th,
one of Star Trek's biggest icons,
or celebrity fans,
or both, will be quoting Gene Roddenberry.
Then we're going to take a deep dive into why we think this sci-fi legend still has a lot to say to the world.
Quote is read by the First Lady of the Star Trek Enterprise and the grandest of grand supremes, Nichelle Nichols.
Science fiction taught me to live in the real world.
Welcome back to the 100th episode of Quoting Gene Roddenberry.
Say it again.
The 100th episode of Quoting Gene Roddenberry, where Rachel and I are very honored to welcome our guest host this week, one more time, Rod Roddenberry, Gene Roddenberry's son. Welcome, Rod. Thank you for being with us.
I am so happy to be here, especially for the 100th. You guys have done an incredible job, and our last three times talking have been really engaging and fun. And now I think we've got a very interesting quote to work with.
We absolutely do. Do you want to jump in there and run away with this? So your father said, science fiction taught me to live in the real world. If you had to say what science fiction taught you, Rod, what would you say?
Oh, well, that's not where I was going with this. That's a great... I'm going to need a moment to think about that one. I was going to interpret this one, and my interpretation was a little bit more literal. But I think it's what Star Trek does. Well, I think it's what Star Trek is for a lot of people. Star Trek is a metaphor. I mean, every scene we see, every message it has in it is an allegory to something in real life on some level. And my father wasn't really able to get these messages. He did other shows. He did the Lieutenant, which was military. He did cop shows. And he had some messaging in that. But a lot of the times it might have been maybe hitting the nail on the head. In this one, you get to put it on a far off planet. You get to make aliens the ones that look weird and doing the dumb things. Remember the aliens that had a black face on one side, white on the other, and white on one side, and black on the other. And to us, that seems so absurd today. But that was a great way of showing the absurdity of skin color. Mm-hmm. And that's science fiction taught me to live in the real world. That is a lesson for the real world. That is to live in the real world. Not how we're living. I think that's how we should live in the real world. And should is a charged word, I understand. But I'm saying in a lot of Star Trek, it's probably a good model to at least take some pointers by.
I'm curious because your dad speaks so much about humans and humans in general. And so as I... watched Star Trek as a kid and then grew up, I always didn't like the distinction of I am a different race than you, because I'm not actually a different race than you. I'm a different ethnicity, I think. You know, I think it's 0.44. No, that's Ivory Soap, but let's just say, let's just say 0.44% is different of us. That's it. It's like the littlest thing
it's
of 1%
bit.
That makes our noses different or our hairs different and things like that. So I think that like Star Trek taught me about living in the real world, to be honest, because here was a Russian on the bridge instead of you have to fear Russians. They're going to bomb your schools. Mm-hmm. Right. That's what was the word then. Or we're in a cold war with them or all the things, even the
point.
What is now an awkward kiss. Right. But at the time, so groundbreaking for white people to see that kiss more so than me or anyone else. But as we see things in movies, we start to understand that that is a part of our own world. And sometimes it is so much easier to see that kiss, that inter ethnic kiss, but we'll call it interracial, even though I hate that phrase. Mm-hmm. It was important for people, Anglos especially, to see that kiss and to start to have those things normalized, right? And isn't it interesting that in the 90s, we almost kind of backslid a little bit, whether it was Don't Ask, Don't Tell, as far as gay people, and not as many. For people who weren't around then, I think there's a little more separate but equal, oddly enough, in the 90s. Like, black people had their movies over here. And, so what your father did with this show was so much ahead of its time, and I'm so grateful. Like, I'm schwitzing all over it, Rod, because I am that generation that benefited from the original Star Trek. Trent.
No, well, if I could I just quickly jump in? Because I wanted to point out two things, and it's based on what you just said, Rachel. First of all, this quote says, science fiction taught me to live in the real world. This is my father saying it. And I made the mistake of, and I don't want to necessarily call it a mistake, but I went right to what Star Trek did. My father right now is crediting all the science fiction authors that he ever read and watched.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And he's saying science fiction, not necessarily Star Trek. So I think, that's something in itself. I'm just very impressed that he did that.
That's a lovely point, because as a little kid, and I do mean like 8, 9, 10, I loved Isaac Asimov's writing, right? Mm-hmm, and that was kind of my introduction to sort of science fiction, and it helped shape my worldview. Trent, what do you think about this super short, but like kind of deep quote?
Yeah, the one thing I want to say, Rod, which you mentioned that about your father. In many of the quotes that we've discussed, he was very generous about spreading the credit around about the writers and the up and coming and the people who would take the stewardship after he and all of us are gone. So I love that you said that, because it's something that we've talked about often, is about how generous your father has been with the credit of the wonderful world of Star Trek. When I think about science fiction and what I learned from it, yes, absolutely, it taught me about the real world too. In particular, when I think about Deep Space Nine, for example. As a teenager, watching these stories about the Bajoran occupation, about the Cardassian occupation of Bajor, and what that meant for these people who suffered genocide, they fought back, they got their planet back. And it's one thing to hear about those kinds of horrific, horrible stories in history books. And it just seems like when you're separated by, sometimes centuries of history, it's kind of hard to, like, as a young person, to synthesize that and kind of identify with that in any way, unless you're touched by it personally, and I wasn't. But to see it played out on a show that I loved with characters that I cared about, I was able to learn and empathize with those characters.
Well, Trent, you're up on the news, because that's Palestine, isn't it? Mm-hmm. And Israel, like with the episode you just talked about.
Yeah. And then when you talk about like the way that Deep Space Nine talks about the Bajoran religion and Benjamin Sisko being the emissary of the prophets, or, and then the other camp is like, well, they're not really prophets. They're not gods. They're just wormhole aliens, and this whole religious debate. For me, it just clicked when you hear, like, these are religious themes that you hear about, like, in the news, in your church, or wherever. But when you see it being acted out on a show that you actually care about, with characters you actually care about, it makes you, it just made me identify with it more, and really, really taught me about the real world.
That's incredible. I, once again, you guys always give me something that I've never even considered in terms of looking at the quote from that angle. I really appreciate. I really do.
It's actually much subtler, Trent, than I love Battlestar Galactica, the remake, but it's much subtler, the religious overtones in Star Trek. They're actually incorporated in a way that I could synthesize a little better, if that makes any sense. Like, Battlestar Galactica is great, but it was so dead on for this religion. Whereas this, I kind of like the ambiguous nature of it all. But let's talk about the fact that you know this better than I do, because Trent's a huge fan. But why don't you tell them the Nichelle Nichols story about why she stayed on Star Trek?
Well, I'm paraphrasing here, but essentially the story is Nichelle kind of decided that she didn't think that she was doing enough important work by just being an actress in a sci-fi TV series. And she was thinking about leaving the show. She ran into Martin Luther King Jr. at an event in between filming the show, and she confessed to him that she was thinking about leaving the show. And Reverend King, like mortified, was like, "You cannot quit the show. You don't understand how important it is to have you on the bridge of the Starship Enterprise, traveling at warp speed in the far distant galaxy. What that teaches the audience, the young children at home watching. And, you know, I think she mentions in her story, and I believe in her memoir, that she thought that she could do more if she was on the streets, you know, with signs and like really being a part of the movement in that way.
Because it was the time of the Black Panthers. Sorry to interrupt, but right. It's the time of the Black Panthers, right. And, you know, the Black Power movement. And also, by the way, do your homework on Black Lives Matter and Black Panthers, because they weren't, they were much maligned, the much maligned common man.
Mm-hmm.
That
mm-hmm.
is what they were. The Black Panthers started the school breakfast program. So anyway, do your homework on that stuff and figure out where the common man has been maligned. At least make your own decision. Don't just
well
take
said.
It from the news, right?
And the last part of that story is, and then the real kicker, I think, and she said this, I believe, in an interview, was that Reverend King said to her that Star Trek was the only show he let his children watch because they could see a Black woman in a position of power on a starship. And it was just something that was just unheard of at the time. And he made her realize that her small, tiny role, which she thought was just a small, tiny role, was so impactful and important. And indeed, it was.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Rod, your dad might be responsible for why I'm such a mouthy broad.
I think that's good.
And how lucky are we? How lucky are we
no,
for
but
that?
I'm saying, I mean, joking, but I mean that, like me as a little kid, seeing this beautiful Black woman up on this thing wearing the shortest skirt ever, but having a powerful job,
mm-hmm.
like that's stuck in my psyche. That will never leave my psyche that you could be up in the stars. You could do whatever you want. Rod.
All mouthy broads, in your own words, who have something to say should definitely be heard.
Absolutely.
This country and this planet would probably do a lot better with more mouthy broads running it.
And
even though that tone doesn't sound right.
No, I know. I shouldn't have said mouthy broads, because really what is considered a mouthy broad would be
intelligent,
an assertive
women.
Man. But right, in a man, it would be he's an intelligent man or a thoughtful mm-hmm. man. Mm-hmm. And I'm just kind of making a joke by saying mouthy broad, because that's kind of what I've been called my whole life, right? And I'm making a joke to say it doesn't bother me. But the truth is, I don't think I'm a mouthy broad. I think I'm someone with a lot to say.
And speak your mind, speak your opinion. I love your opinions. I absolutely do. I'm on the show. I just wanted to go back to the quote one more time, because again, listening to you guys, listening to the mouthy broad, and Trent, I don't have a derogatory term for you yet that you've given yourself.
Can I call you a mouthy broad, Trent?
Yes, you can. I'll take that.
Remember, you guys both said it, not me. Anyhow, science fiction taught me to live in the real world. It makes me think about what if. Science fiction is different than fantasy. Fantasy is anything. You can grow wings and fly away. Science fiction should be, and I'm sure we have our own interpretations, but I'm going to say mine, should be based in some sort of version of reality. It can have elements of fantasy in it. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying Star Trek needs to, but I'm saying sci-fi can. But what it does is it gives you the what if. So the what if, it teaches me to live in the real world. To live in the real world, I think, really gets you to ask, what if? Look at the life you live in and say, what if? What if this were different? What if I moved my furniture around? What if I went out the door a different way? What if I went down the street and got into a car accident? What if I went down the street and met someone and did something nice? What if the world was a better place? It taught me to live in the real world. Gives you that permission to look at the reality you live in and think of it differently. Star Trek does it to think of it better. And I think that is, just hearing you guys say that, making me think, I think Star Trek is a way for you to say, what if the world was a better place? This is how I could live in it. And that's what I love about it.
I can't top that. That's brilliant what you just said, though. You know, it really
is. I stole it from you guys. I stole it from you.
So, Rachel, because you brought up the kiss between Captain Kirk and Uhura, and we've talked about it a few times through the course of the podcast, your real world that you grew up with, you had a white father and a Black mother. How did that resonate with you in terms of seeing it? You know, because I know you talk about the awkwardness, like, and can you talk about that a little bit?
I don't only say awkward, Rod and Trent, because again, I had a specific upbringing, right? Well, I was in foster care until I was 4, and then my dad came and got us, and my dad had remarried another black woman, right? So my mom's black, then he remarried a black woman. So I'm there, and yes, it was a hair confusing. I'm just being honest. It was a hair confusing because I thought, I see them kiss in their living room. These guys seem like they want to but not want to kiss. Like, even though I was a very small child, I got the subtlety that maybe they did. Maybe there was this underlying sexual tension between Kirk and everybody. A rock, a green lady.
That makes sense for Kirk.
Yeah, you know what I'm saying? Like, everything there. So I saw that, but it was a hair confusing in terms of why are they not? Why is it this struggle to kiss? Because I was too young to understand the parallel to the struggle of the black movement at the time and why your dad was so smart to have it actually be. He's basically be doing a passion play of what was actually playing out in America, which is in certain states, my parents' marriage would have been illegal, right?
Right.
That's the truth at that particular time. So that's my take on it, but I'm sure other people, because they didn't live in a household with two different flavor parents, probably have a completely different impression of that. At the same time, I knew as a small child how amazing it was intuitively that I didn't see very many black, beautiful black women. And my mom was very dark skinned and da 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 da. So here was this Nichelle Nichols who wasn't even a light skinned honey, which is the name, like, quote unquote, because they only used light skinned black actresses for a while on television. So here we have Star Trek comes along and this beautiful woman with deep skin tone, so important to me, can't thank your dad enough. You know, and I feel the same way about, I was so fortunate when I got to meet Romero and say thank you for making that black man the hero of your zombie movie, right? Because during that time period, means nothing to kids today, but during that time period, it meant everything. Or for your dad to have a Russian, but especially to have a black woman on that bridge. Like I said, that is embedded in my psyche. It will never leave me and I will be eternally grateful. And it's also why I was so thrilled to be a part of this podcast.
But Rachel, what a beautiful way for you to grow up, to grow up with a white father and a black mother and have no concept of there being an issue, at least at a young age until you got older and learned about the rest of the world.
Yeah.
That was just normal. It must have blown your mind to know that there's people out there in the world that have an issue with this. And this is my normal. This is my everyday.
No, honestly, it was I lived in New York City, too, as a small kid. So I had this beautiful, blissful upbringing of very little stuff that I had to deal with. And then we moved to upstate New York, where I learned the hard way what, you know, there are certain cultures in this country that are stuck in 1950 forever. Right. You go outside of rural areas. So I learned the hard way. But Star Trek is one of the things that I would actually could bring up to people to say, you're crazy because this is the future, man. This is, or we don't say man anymore, but you know, like this is the future. Like you can stay stuck in your stuff, but I'm going to go with the Trekkies or Trekkers. Anyway, Trent,
we have to wrap this.
I know.
A little devastating.
I know.
This is a testament to your pops, sir, because I'm 100 episodes in and I think I'm pretty clever, but I can get bored with things. And I was never once bored. I was intrigued and excited and thrilled to be a part of this podcast.
And I can tell.
I very easily could do a whole nother 100. So maybe part due. I don't know. Maybe that's down the line.
I'm sure we can find 100 more.
But it has been such an honor to be a part of this podcast. And Rachel, you are the most amazing partner. And I'm so glad we got to do this together.
I'll give you your money later. we want to thank Rod, too, for taking the time out.
Absolutely.
Because obviously this was an homage to your father and the work that he created. So to have you on here is an exceptional gift for us. So thank you.
Well, I can't thank you guys enough for taking the time that you have to really dive deep into these things. And I understand at times it has been challenging because my father, listen, the idea of a better future and humanity all getting along together, that is really it. That is the foundational philosophy behind this. And you've taken 100 quotes, which teeter on all sides of that, but you've had to make 100 episodes of this and keep them engaging and interesting. And I think you've done exactly that. I've loved my time with you, these 4 shows. Thank you.
That means a lot to me coming from you.
Yeah,
but Trent, let me
kind.
Just sing
Thank
your praises.
You.
Thank you, Trent, for being calm, cool and collected while I'm an excitable gal and holding it down. You know, like you're such a strong force and being able to work with you was a super, just a joy for me, frankly.
An absolute joy. Absolute
to bounce off
labor
your
of love. Yeah, and yours as well. And we here it is, 100 episodes celebrating 100 quotes of Gene Roddenberry. Today would have been his 100th birthday. So what a way to celebrate what a legacy with Rod, his son, Rachel, you, my wonderful partner, and Nichelle Nichols, who read today's quote, which you can check out on our social media accounts on the Roddenberry Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
And if I can say, think about all the amazing things that have happened in the last 100 years, all the beautiful, wonderful things that we as a human species have done. Now let's start thinking of 100 years from now. What are those beautiful things that we have to look forward to? And let's start making them happen.
Amen to that.
Yeah.
I mean,
yes. Very, I'm like, I can't add to that. The man's speaking the truth.
For one last time, thank you for listening to Quoting Gene Roddenberry.
Ciao.
Live long and prosper.
Ah! Oh my God, I almost started crying. And gentle listeners out there, please stay subscribed to Quoting Gene Roddenberry, because before the end of the year, we will still be celebrating 100 years of Gene Roddenberry, and we have a very special surprise coming your way. So stay subscribed and stay tuned. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Quoting Gene Roddenberry.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's quote, so tweet us, post us, DM us, whatever.
We're at Roddenberry on Twitter and Facebook, and at Roddenberry Official on Instagram.
Quoting Gene Roddenberry is a Roddenberry podcast hosted by me, Rachel True.
And me, Trent Venegas. Producing are Claire Kramer and Kelsey Goldberg, with executive producers Trevor Roth and Rod Roddenberry.
Engineering and editing are provided by Elizabeth Joy Windham.
And special thanks to all those who were kind enough to read a quote and give a voice to Gene Roddenberry's everlasting words.
Live long and prosper.